Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be, and I'm Michael Sterling, and who are you, sir?
I will be Andrew David James today.
Will
can,
you?
Can that guy follow me around and just say, entering the room now is Andrew David James, right?
I think we could make some sort of arrangement with him.
Nice. I don't
he
think
he works
I can
on the cheap.
It.
He's non-equity. He's
oh, nice. We're in good shape.
Non all of that. Non. Yes. Well, here we are, August 11th. We are almost done with summer.
Still hot weather, though.
It's kind of
still
scary,
of hot weather
it?
To go around, yeah.
Well, they say that the big temperatures are coming back up again.
That's right.
So, well, I'm not looking forward to it
yeah.
at all. My yard and my plants, all that stuff, you know, have suffered greatly because of the drought, and we can't water them as frequently
right.
as we should. But
right.
at any rate, that's a discussion for another time and another place.
But we have a lush and beautiful show here on State of the Arts today, don't we, Michael?
Yes, we do. And before we get to that lush and beautiful show, we'd like to thank our sponsor, ladies and gentlemen, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit breakdownexpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar and a State of the Arts.
We are indeed. And what a show, Andrew, we've got today. One devoted to a new intimate production of the critically acclaimed Tony Award and Pulitzer Prize Broadway-winning musical Next to Normal.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that, Michael. A show of importance which focuses on the effects of mental illness in a modern life, a very serious issue, obviously. But in this dramatic Broadway stunner, it's done with such an unflinching sense of humor. You've got to love that.
You're right. And the show's director is the very seasoned Thomas James O'Leary,
mm-hmm.
who, I might add, is also a Broadway star, best known for his 3-year run as the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera.
A small role, right?
Yeah. And Thomas will be calling in just a few minutes, but before we speak to him and or our guests in studio, how was your week?
My week? 2 weeks. I haven't seen you for 2 weeks, Michael.
That's right.
I've
had
missed
a vacation.
You. Yeah. Did you miss me at all?
I did.
Nice. I love it when they lie across the table at me.
<did. laughs>
Michael, I tell you, it flew by. You know, this was quote unquote a vacation, right, for me. But as you know, in this town, nobody gets a vacation. You're either working or you're looking for work. And to try to take a few days out, you realize it doesn't stop. Yeah.
15 years for me. Did you see that little note in the script?
I did. I noticed your little poor Michael has not taken a vacation. But, you know,
that's
I don't
right.
say poor Michael because I honestly think that's a product of living in Los Angeles, right? I mean, there's no. If I stop working, I feel like a dolphin that stops swimming. I just sink to the bottom of the ocean. You know.
Well,
it's like,
somewhat. But you know, I think it's important that we take time for ourselves and clear out the cobwebs and do all that because it's. You know, somebody told me once. I was directing a production of The Sound of Music years ago, and the producer. I was sitting in the theater all by myself. And it was a very large theater, and the work light was on the stage. I'm sitting there, and I was like, just totally, you know, I couldn't stand up anymore. I was just so tired, and we're in Hell Week, you know, for that time period. And he said, you need to go home.
Yeah.
It was like 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I said, I know. I said, but I need to do. And he said, no, you need to go home. He said, because tired minds produce tired work.
That's true. That's a good friend, somebody looking out for you.
And
absolutely.
I always remembered that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. This so-called vacation started out with me leaving a job in Santa Barbara, rushing down and finally getting on the plane, and then being compounded by not only Delta's terrible problems on the way back, which we walked out to LAX and saw people 3 deep looking for a place to sleep in Los Angeles airport. And then, of course, we had all kinds of other issues. I got there, and 2 days after we were there, got news that I had to attend a funeral for a family member who passed away.
So sorry.
92 years old, a great man and a really good friend. But it felt like life just doesn't stop. You know, you want to take a vacation, you kind of go, okay, everybody else needs to take a vacation with me because I really need a break. But I did get 1 day at the pool. I taught my little girl how to dive. Well, I taught her how to belly flop. She turned it into a dive, which was nice too.
Smart.
So, but yeah, we did have a good time. And we have a gentleman calling in right now. So
we
would you like to say hello, Michael?
Absolutely. It's Michael Sterling with State of the Arts. Welcome, Thomas.
Hey, how are you?
Good, very Thomas. Well. And this is Andrew David James.
Hello, co-host. Thomas. How are you today? Doing all right?
I'm great.
Good.
How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us here today. We have two remarkable people in studio.
Yes, we do.
I take it you know a couple of them, yes?
We have the lovely Michelle Lane and Harrison Maloney.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi.
So
aren't they awesome?
They really
they
are.
They are awesome. And we kind of know each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. Harrison and I know each other, and then Michelle and I I've watched her work on the big stage out there at Cabrillo Music Theater. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
So we are thrilled that you are at the helm, sir, of this particular production, because before we went on air, I was asking Harrison and Michelle if this was the regional kind of 99-seat theater premiere of it. Is that the case?
In a way, I think that there was a community theater production of it that was done in Santa Monica. I actually forgot the name of the group, but so, you know, I mean, it's definitely one of the first major 99-seat theater productions of it.
Right.
But there may have been one other before this, yeah.
Well, I happen to like that playhouse, too, the Pico Playhouse. Mm-hmm. I think it's a terrific place to see a show. I've seen a few there, so I can't wait to see this one there. And this is a...
Yeah, Pico Playhouse is terrific. I mean, it's. I think it's one of the nicest 99-seat theaters I've ever seen in L.A.
I agree.
And, I'm happy that I get to invite, you know, all my friends to see it, and I don't have to apologize for anything.
Well, Thomas, obviously, you know, working in theaters in L.A., you get to deal with a lot of different material, and this piece is one of my favorite for years and years and years as an actor. You look at those roles, and there's some really great writing in there, obviously, and something that every actor would love to tackle. But as a director, it's got to be hard because there's very sensitive material that you have to approach respectfully, but also there's a lot of funny in this show, and you've got to ride that line. Was that difficult for you to do?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. You know, and I was talking about this last night in rehearsal to the actors. There, you know, because an earlier version of Next Normal, as you may know, had a lot more funny in it, mm-hmm. And it wasn't received as well by the critics and the audiences. And it wasn't until they focused a lot more on the seriousness of how it affects the whole family. Her illness affects the whole family, that the piece really gelled and turned into the Pulitzer Prize winning musical that it is.
Yeah.
But there is still enough funny in it, I think, that we get some comic relief, thankfully. I think that if there's too much irony, it keeps the audience distanced rather than drawing them in to actually kind of live with the family, to relate to everyone. You know, there's six different characters who are affected in different ways by one person's mental illness, and I think everyone in the audience can relate to at least one or two, or if not all of those characters at different points in the show. And mm-hmm. So I think that I'm leaning a little more in my work toward remembering the seriousness of it and keeping things very naturalistic, because we're in an intimate theater, which is a wonderful opportunity with this kind of a piece to draw people in even more. Thankfully, we have, you know, a leading actress in Michelle who has a wonderful comic sense. So I don't have to like pull the comedy out of her as I would another actress, you know, and she's wonderful at writing that line.
Sure. I wouldn't get that at all from her in studio. She's been so serious the whole time talking.
And very much a diva here.
Clearly.
Well, I think this is wonderful, especially, you know, I think Harrison and Michelle and the rest of your cast is lucky to have you, because you are someone who is very accomplished in theater yourself and have an extraordinary career as a Broadway star. And what was it that made you want to direct, or have you always, I know you have many credits as a director, but have you always wanted to direct, or have you always tried to do both, or you came to a point?
Yeah, well, it's I like, my life's kind of been all over the place. In the early days when I went to Trinity Rep Conservatory, I mainly focused on directing. And I remember the artistic director, Larry Eric, said, "You have to direct when you get out of here." And I took it as an insult to my acting. So I said, aww, "I'll show him." And I went to New York, and I eventually did fairly well with my acting, and got that out of my system. And it's in the last, it's like since, it's ironically, since I moved to LA about 10 years ago, that I thought, I think I'm old enough now and I've done enough that I want to take what I put on the back burner years ago onto the front burner. And I feel, it's not that I feel more at home as a director, it just feels like the right time in my life to bring that back to the forefront. Hmm. And I feel it just, it's what makes, it's what feeds my soul now. So it was early days, and now it's, you know, my life is all about that today. So it's a kind of a weird journey, but that's pretty much how it went.
But you wouldn't say no to Broadway if they came calling again, right?
I wouldn't say no if it were the right project. I find it a little demanding, too demanding for my body at my age to belt out high notes 8 times a week, week after week.
So it's
something for now that I'm not looking to do.
Michelle thinks she can still do it. She's ready to put you in something right now.
Yeah, if the right thing came along, I might, yeah.
Thomas, I love this theater that you're working at. It's such a small, intimate house, and I really think that's the way this show needs to be, because if you don't feel like you're a part of this family, then you don't entirely get the show, I think. Any distance that's created in the audience really hurts the effect of this piece. Have you had a good time playing in this house?
Oh, yeah. It's a great house. It's a great house, and I really look forward to filling it with people to experience what we have on the stage. Because I feel like, you know, we're practically in their laps, and
right.
not in an environmental sense. It's not like that, but it's a small enough theater that I think people will feel a part of the family. And yeah, I think it's a terrific house. We have a wonderful band. We are putting them in the back, unfortunately for them, but we have also a wonderful sound system. So that, and we had a Sitz probe the other day, and the band sounds incredible. Of course, the singers sound incredible, but the mix in that house, I think, is going to be perfect. So,
it's a five-piece band, I
think it's going to be great.
It's a five-piece band?
We have five pieces, yeah.
And, you know, yeah. I think, just to rewind a little bit, something that you touched upon, and Andrew said, the intimacy of the theater, I think, puts a whole different experience with this show. I saw it at the Amundsen Theater when it came through, and for me, and I wasn't, I was just telling Harrison this before we went on air, I wasn't feeling very well that evening, and that's a big show to take in when you're not feeling well, and I shouldn't have probably gone that evening because I ended up not really embracing it, you know? It's something
I think it's tough. I think, I saw it on Broadway, and then I saw it at the Amundsen, and then I saw it at La Mirada, so all three houses were big, and I was blown away when I saw it on Broadway, I will admit. The Amundsen is even bigger, so that gets tougher. But when I saw it on Broadway, I truly was blown away. But I don't know, as soon as I got the chance to, take this gig directing that play in an intimate theater, I thought this is, a chance of a lifetime, not just for myself, but putting that kind of a play in an intimate theater. I almost feel like that's what it was written for. It was written for an intimate theater. But of course, like all good projects and all producers who want to make money on a project, they all want to take it to Broadway, meaning it's going to have to be in a large theater.
Yeah.
And it's a six person play. It's a six person play, intimate play. Now, it does have a rock score, so that's something that really does help it work in a large space. But I think I'm just thrilled that we get to, do this in an intimate theater, where I almost feel like, at least the little story I'm telling myself, is that that's what it was written. That's what that's what it was written for, you know?
Yeah.
So we finally get to do it the way it was meant to be done, you know?
Well, you know, here in Los Angeles, we have a unique opportunity in that we have a lot of film actors who love to do stage as well. And this really is a film piece. I mean, this is an intimate acting piece. It's got a lot of things going, obviously, with all the benefit of live theater as well. But you're not casting Ado Annie when you're casting the roles of the show. You know, you're looking for people right. who've got some serious acting chops. What was that casting right. process like? And most importantly, why didn't you call me? You know, really, I think it's what we all want to
get down to the nitty gritty.
Oh, no.
What was the casting process like?
I wasn't involved in calling people in so much. So I'll have to check in on that.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't, but, Andrew, because he cannot sing or dance.
These details always keep me out of musicals. I don't understand.
We can work around that. Yeah.
What was it like? How did you find your people? And was that a challenge here in Los Angeles to find the right people for this show?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's because you have to be able to sing it, and it's a demanding score. So you have to be able to sing it, and you're right, have almost a TV-style acting.
Mm-hmm.
It was what I was really struck by when I saw it. I was like, oh, my God, they're doing, like, this big rock score, and they sound awesome, and it's very naturalistic acting.
That's exactly, you know? Right, yeah.
And a lot of musicals are that are set in a contemporary way, but this even more so. So it's like TV acting, singing your guts out.
That's exactly, you know? Right. Well, you have an amazing cast through that casting process.
Yes, you
that
do.
We're going to talk to them a little bit more. Wanted to say thank you to
awesome.
You for joining us today. We're grateful for you joining us here on State of the Arts.
Thank you, Thomas, so much.
Thanks
for taking
for the
time. I know that we
really
interrupted your
it.
Teaching day, I think, but we appreciate you taking the time. And we can't wait to see the show.
I can't wait for you to see it.
And we're
going to
tell everybody how to buy tickets and all that good stuff. So best of luck, and listen to the. We'll send the publicist, Nora Feldman, the dear Nora Feldman, a link that she can share with all of you so you can listen to this broadcast, you know, after it's run today live. So you'll be able
awesome.
To do
that.
Yeah.
Very Thomas,
good.
Thanks again. We'll hope
Thank
to see you,
you
soon.
Sir.
All right. Take care. Have fun.
Bye bye.
Right.
Thomas is great. Our studio audience loved him.
Yes, indeed. My goodness. So, shall we move on here?
I think we should. I think we should introduce the amazing people we have, or at least one of them we have in studio here.
Excuse me. I will do that if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is an LA Ovation Award winner for the West Coast premiere of Swing. Her Broadway credits in Las Vegas. Our Avenue Q, which she was happy to do there, one of my favorite shows, and she also had the opportunity of making her debut on Broadway with that show as it was actually closing on Broadway. So better that than nothing, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to making a Broadway debut. Regional productions include Mary Poppins as Mrs. Banks for Cabrillo Music Theater, Finding Nemo, the musical, as the original Dory, and In the Next Room as Annie, Chess as Florence, Sideshow as one of the two twins, Violet, She Loves Me, one of my favorite shows as well, Amalia, she played in that, and Measure for Measure as Isabella, to name but a very few of her credits. She's here today, however, to talk about her starring role as Diana in a new intimate production of Next Normal, as we've just heard from its director, being presented August 19th through September 25th at the popular Pico Playhouse in Los Angeles. Please welcome Michelle Lane. Crazy for you today.
Thank you for
Michelle,
having
thank you
me.
For being
boy,
here. Wow.
Boy, absolutely.
Thomas seems like a blast to work with, is
He's
he?
He's so wonderful.
Yeah, right?
The first day I met him, because he actually came in actually a little late in the process. I had already been cast when Thomas joined our company. I got to watch Harrison's audition, who you're going to talk to after me. But he had said a couple things in the audition process to the other actors, and I was like, oh, he's my people. We're going to be good. We're going to be good. He's speaking my language. This is going
nice.
To work out nicely. And he just really is. He's wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah.
So the casting process started with
another director. Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Who shall remain nameless?
Yes. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Michelle, you had an interesting thing to say earlier, kind of talking about some of the other roles that you've played. You've worked in a number of great theaters here in Los Angeles area. What do you think the main difference is between your experience on the road and in New York and working in L.A.?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's been so different in so many different theaters. I guess I'm a little picky about where I work. So, you know, I've worked in some wonderful theaters, and just so long as the quality has been top-notch, I've been happy. But obviously, working in New York has such a variety of different spaces and levels of productions that, I mean, that in itself is a huge, diverse atmosphere.
Yeah. Is it any different, though, from Los Angeles? When it's we're not talking about Broadway stages, necessarily, but the off-Broadway community there? Is it similar to Los Angeles?
You know, I would say it's similar. Yeah. You know, that especially when you compare something like an intimate 99-seat space, you know, compared to maybe, you know, the Brooklyn, you know, big, I think it's the gallery. Mm. But, you know, it's like kind of similar. I mean, in different ways. But yes, it is similar.
Working in Los Angeles, you tend to get people to come from wide different areas of town. And so you're playing to people from vastly different communities all over the place and who've driven miles and miles and miles down our freeways to see the shows.
Right.
I always find that as an interesting responsibility, particularly with a show like this, in that you have to reach out and just find the core of that character and show how they relate to people from so many different walks of life.
Right.
It's interesting for me to see audiences respond to Los Angeles theater. I think sometimes in New York and certainly in Europe, you'll see people who come in with a very set view of what they want to see. In Los Angeles, I feel like it's more open. You get a more open audience reaction.
Well, in this production in particular, we start, the opening number is called Just Another Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is such a relatable moment for so many people because we're just showing the typical family morning, waking up and making breakfast. And then, you know, obviously there's a turning point. But right from the get-go, I feel like every person in the audience is going to be able to relate and immerse themselves into the story that we're about to unfold, which is kind of a brilliant way to start a show.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Well, and the subject matter, of course, is something that I think is, unfortunately, in these times that we live in, which are so fast and frantic, you know, and mental illness, I think, sometimes often gets not even recognized.
No, it gets hidden, for sure.
Totally. I mean, people don't know that that's what's
going on. Well, and they don't want to talk about it either.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's something that needs to be paid attention to and, you know, to find a way to condition it, especially people who suffer from, you know, bipolar disorders and so forth, and such as Rosemary Clooney herself. That was her problem in her lifetime that took her down, but she was able to, through some great care by psychiatrists who were very passionate with her, she did make a comeback and was able to level herself out and find her life again back on the stage, not only as one of the most, you know, valuable interpreters of the Great American Songbook, but certainly as even an actress. I mean, she utilized that experience when she went on to ER. George Clooney had invited her nephew to be a guest star, and she was nominated for an Emmy for that performance. Not out of sentimentality, really, because she actually gave an amazing performance as a mentally disturbed woman.
Well, and so many artists have struggled with mental illness over the years throughout history, and it's only now that we have the tools to fully diagnose and treat it, and still with our lifestyle, it so often gets swept under the rug. This is an interesting place to portray that, too, because you're in the laps, as Thomas said, of the cast on this one. You get a close-up picture of what this is like, and it's a lot of fun. The show is a lot of fun, but it's a really serious show, a really important show.
For sure.
And it was written to be that, obviously, too. You talked a little bit about what this role means to you and what a great opportunity is. What are your favorite things about playing this character?
Oh, God. You know, when I first approached the material, I was really nervous about portraying someone accurately who has this mental condition. And I got so wrapped up in it. We had a doctor come to our rehearsal very early on, and I asked her, what are the characteristics of, you know, I mean, I have known someone who has bipolar disorder, and, you know, had dealt myself, in fact, with, you know, little bits of depression, you know, on a minor level. So I could kind of relate in some ways. But I really wanted, like, something to grab onto. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because through this rehearsal process, because it has been so all-encompassing, I realized it's... She's a normal person. She is a normal person. I don't need to characterize her or put labels on her. And I think it was making her as human as possible in this process that has been really like a kind of a mind-blowing moment for me, where I was like, oh, she's just trying to figure out life. Mm-hmm. She's trying to figure herself out. She's trying to understand why all this is going on inside her. And that was a real turning point for me. But as far as kind of what I mean, I enjoy her sense of humor, which I really didn't expect. I've seen the show. It was many years ago on Broadway. That was the only time I saw it.
You did see it on Broadway.
I did. I saw Alice Ripley, and I was living there at the time. And I remember just being so mind... I just was like sitting there. I was like, oh my God, at some point I have to play this role. I'm too young now, but at some point, and I'm probably still a little young, but it works. You know, but she's just... I didn't remember the comedy because I got so wrapped up in Alice and her crazy that I didn't remember it. So when we started going through it, it was like there were these like pops of light almost that were like popping off the page, because you kind of are dealing with all this serious and this angry and, you know, frustration, and then all of a sudden she just has something really out of left field and just wonderfully humorous and lovely, and her sense of humor, her you know, this character is just it's relatable.
Yeah.
And I feel like those moments make her human and make her more real for everybody experiencing what she's going through.
Yeah.
So that part has been really just, I mean, I love that part of it.
You found your foothold for sure.
I enjoy that.
Do you think as a whole, you haven't opened yet, but taking this project on, is it more involved than most of the things that you've taken on in the past, or is it just different in that
as
sense.
Far as what do you mean involved?
Your involvement in it and finding this, you know, all the right choices that you want to make as an actress and as a singer and so forth.
Maybe comparison to a role like Mrs. Banks, which of course you played so beautifully with Cabrillo, but
that's a
very different style of acting.
Well, and I wouldn't necessarily compare the two.
Contrast.
There are a lot of parallels in my life right now. I mean, I'm not bipolar, I'm not crazy.
You might be by the end of the show, though. But it could send you over the edge.
No, oddly enough. I thought, you know, a friend of mine was like, you know, are you going to, like, be okay going in this woman's shoes and doing this every night? And I was like, put me on that roller coaster.
It's cathartic, right?
It's
you get
so,
it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a roller coaster ride, and it's so fun, honestly. Even though it's a lot emotionally, it is a wonderful ride. And I love where the brilliant writers take her journey. Mm-hmm. It just goes, you know, by the end of the play, I say the play because it really is a piece. Mm-hmm. It's not just some, you know, musical, song and dance musical. It's a really hearty, sink your teeth into piece of theater that by the end, you're just, the road they take her on is so real, and it's so real. It's not like a pretty wrap a bow around it piece.
Yeah.
But yes, I've completely, you know, it's completely all encompassing. I spend every single moment of my day either thinking about her or, I mean, I have two kids, so it's really hard to devote time. So I just end up putting, you know, headphones in my ears and thinking about the songs and where I want to take them and the process. And I mean, I don't ever stop thinking about it. So it's been all encompassing.
It's not one you can leave when you drive home.
No.
It goes with you everywhere.
Andrew, we should tell people how to see the show. Do you have that information?
Absolutely.
With you?
In fact, I'll let you give the ticket information if you don't mind. But we're talking about, of course, Next to Normal, now on stage at the Pico Playhouse. And Michael, do you know how people can go find out tickets about that?
You know, they can go to the Pico Playhouse's website on the interweb and simply buy tickets that way, or call the Playhouse, and I'm just trying to pull up there.
Obviously, if you Google Next to Normal and you Google that with Pico
exactly.
Playhouse, that'll pop up.
But they can certainly call 310-204-4440.
Wonderful.
And make arrangements to go to this wonderful production that we're hearing about today. And the Pico Playhouse is located at 10508 West Pico Boulevard in Los Angeles.
And Michelle, is there another place they could visit there to find out a little more information?
Yes, there's a website. It's N like next, 2, the number 2, N like normal. So N2N musical LA.com.
So that's three letters, or three digits, into N normal. That's great.
And buy your tickets early, because I have a feeling this is going to kind of go through the roof.
Oh, this is one of those shows for sure that I know people want to see. So it will catch fire for sure, no doubt.
Well, we're obviously going to talk to your co-star here in a minute. Do you have a few minutes to hang around with us and talk a little more?
Of course.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And in addition to that, ladies and gentlemen, we did want to tell you about something that's coming up on Monday, August 15th. This is an important evening that has had two such evenings before it over the past 2 years. This is the ALS Association Golden West Chapter and their big evening in benefit for ALS, the very debilitating disease that I'm sure if you're not familiar with it, you should become familiar with it. The filmmakers of the newly released documentary Gleason are being recognized for their outstanding achievements in the fight against ALS at the third annual One Starry Night, a special performance at the Pasadena Playhouse this Monday, August 15th. To raise funds for the outreach programs of the Golden West Chapter here in California. And the Spotlight Award will be given to the actual makers of the documentary Gleason. There are some wonderful, wonderful people on the bill who will be entertaining you that evening, and that encompasses such people as Jason Alexander, of course, who you would know from Seinfeld and Broadway's Jerome Robbins, and also the great John Lloyd Young,
mm-hmm.
who created the role of Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys
of
on
course.
Broadway. Juliana Hanson, who is a Disney girl herself. Jean Louisa Kelly from Into the Woods on Broadway. And also had a wonderful TV series a few years back.
Others would include, of course, Danny Stiles, I believe, as well.
Yes, Danny.
Joanne Worley from
mm-hmm.
Wicked. Exactly, yes. Robert Yako, is that how you say his last
Yako.
Name?
Yako.
Yako. Mm-hmm. So some amazing talents there on stage, obviously.
Indeed. And Miley Cyrus is the honorary chair who will be there to present an award. And that in itself should be kind of fun.
That's
I don't
right.
know whether she'll be performing or not, but you got to go to find out. And you can do this easily by noting this, ladies and gentlemen, again, Pasadena Playhouse, which is at 39 South El Molino Avenue in Pasadena. And you can simply go to the Golden West Chapter website, which is ALSAGoldenWest.org, or call them at 415-967-2572. And for those of you who don't know about this disease, I'm going to tell you very simply that it is something that is a very progressive disease that affects the nerve cells in the brain and the spinal cord. And people with ALS lose the ability to walk, talk, speak, and swallow, and eventually to breathe. And while their five senses, in most cases their minds, continue to function normally, the average life expectancy of a person with ALS is 2 to 5 years from the diagnosis. However, with recent advances in research and improved access to medical care, people with ALS are living longer and more productive lives, but they still need your help.
And obviously this disease got its common name from the great baseball star Lou Gehrig, who
yes.
a world-class athlete, and then immediately his career was ended as he dealt with this. What a blessing now that we have people reaching out and taking resources and dedicating to finding a cure about this.
Absolutely.
So, It's amazing. So plus, obviously, you can go to Pasadena Playhouse. There'll be a link on their website, I'm sure, to find out more about that.
PasadenaPlayhouse.org. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Well, we should introduce our next guest
we
here, Michael.
We should.
Our next guest portrays Gabe in Next to Normal, and his Los Angeles theater credits include I Love You Because at Hollywood's Hudson Theater, Michael in one of my favorites, Tick, Tick, Boom, also at the Hudson Theater, The Addams Family for 3D Theatricals, one of our favorite companies here at State of the Arts, at both historic Plummer Theater, as well as the beautiful Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Robertson in the Cabrillo Music Theater's production of Mary Poppins, and Hugo in Bye Bye Birdie, also at Cabrillo. And Alan in the Los Angeles revival of Bear and the regional premiere of Spring Awakening. Give it up, ladies and gentlemen, for Harrison Melanie. They like you here, Harrison. There's no doubt about it, my friend. We've talked about some serious topics here today. Obviously, dealing with mental illness and with ALS and mm-hmm. so many serious topics out mm-hmm. there in the world. Mm-hmm. For me, Next to Normal has always been about the heart of these characters and how they deal with trial. It doesn't matter what the trial is, although obviously it's mm-hmm. It's mental illness and this. But the way they cope with that, I think, is so fascinating. What was that like for you to dig into a character who has to deal with that?
It's been a very interesting process because Gabe is actually the one character that at surface level seems much more perfect than mm-hmm. everybody else. He is the president of the Key Club at school. He's like the quarterback in football. He's the all-American son. And our director Tom has made it very clear that he really wants me to bring that out because the audience needs to be able to see the contrast between everybody else that's going on with dealing with all these hardships, and Gabe kind of is the light for at least part of the show.
Mm-hmm. That archetype of the character who maybe doesn't seem to have as many troubles can sometimes be the one who transforms the most in a show like this. Someone who is forced to deal with something that they have no reason to deal with and no experience in dealing with in your life, in your personal life, and obviously in all of our personal lives. Do you find that this show has been kind of opened up your eyes to others' troubles, something that they might have dealt with that you might not have fully appreciated or understood before?
It's actually hit pretty home with me. I, for a good majority of my life, had to deal with obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm. And it got bad to the point where I had to go into treatment for it.
Wow.
And I was at UCLA for that. And I went through a 4-week or 6-week program and got the help I needed. And I've lived a much better life since then. That was about 3 years ago. And so doing the show has actually been quite interesting because I actually relate a lot more to the other characters, especially Diana.
That's got to be interesting.
It's actually been hard at times because I'm so tempted to almost fall into kind of the archetypes of the other characters.
Right.
And so the directors, you know, kept me on track and really trying to find a strong, grounded person. And I've gotten there since my treatment. But yeah, it's been very interesting. I've wanted to do this show so bad because I feel like it sheds so much light on the mental health community, and
right.
especially bipolar disorder, which, similar to obsessive compulsive disorder, I feel like get a lot of weird interpretations of it. A lot of people will say, "Oh, I'm bipolar," or "Oh, I have OCD," and it's like they have no idea what people actually do deal with on a day-to-day basis, because both of these disorders like really take over your body completely, and a lot of people are able to cover them up and you would have no idea what's going on, especially OCD, but bipolar too.
The evolution of our language, obviously, and how we speak about other people,
sure.
I think defines how civilized we are as a society. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And I was just going to say, because of the, which you kind of answered it, Michelle's having seen the show on Broadway and saying mm-hmm. to herself at that time that she had to play this role. And did you see it before yourself?
I saw it at the Amundsen.
Oh, you did.
Okay. And loved it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And I also saw it at La Mirada, and I loved it there, too.
And you knew both times that you had to play this role?
I knew I had
point?
To play this
yeah.
part. I was actually working on I Love You Because. I I don't even know if the show had opened yet when I got the call from Michelle. My show hadn't opened. And I had said to myself a while back that I wouldn't do two shows at the same time because it's a lot to do. And I don't always recommend it, but I originally said no, I think. But
you were hesitant.
I was hesitant.
You were like, oh, I don't know if I can make that work. And I said, think about
it. But
Michelle
was pushing me. And then I got a call from the producer, and I was like, oh, I think I should go.
Why not?
So, I went in, and I actually drove down with Michelle to the audition, and she already had the part, so that was pretty comforting to go with her. And I didn't know that there were seeing many people, but I walked into a room of, like, five Gabes. And I knew this because it usually is a very typical costume of jeans.
That could totally be the name of another show, Room with Five Gabes.
And like a V-neck or a crew, like, with a color.
How funny.
And I, of course, was in that, too. And so I was like, oh, I got some competition here.
Their attire.
I know. I went in. I worked with my acting coach, Becca Kenningsberg, beforehand and was very prepared. Thank you so much. She actually directed I Love You Because.
Is it I Love You Because or is it I Love You Because You're Perfect Now Change?
That's actually a different show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe you were abbreviating.
I know. I actually used to get them confused too. Yeah. I went in. I felt good about my audition and then they kept two of us. And then we went and did more. It was like a little callback. And then I threw
the other gentleman under the bus and then got the part. It's a wonderful story.
He actually was hired on the spot.
That's great. So, isn't that a great feeling when you leave knowing?
It was cool, yeah. I went
That ever happened to you before?
No. I was waiting outside. And I was worried that one of them was going to walk outside and just see me like, kind of like waiting behind.
He was waiting for me.
I was waiting for Michelle because they were auditioning the dance. And then one of the producers, Rory, like said, hey, you can come in. It's totally fine. And then I forget, was it Tom or was it Zach?
Yeah, Tom leaned over. Oh, no, it was Zach. Our producer, Zach Letsky, who's wonderful. He leaned over and he said, hey, Harrison, we had a question for you. And he was like kind of nervous and standing there. And he's like, okay, well, yeah, what? He was like, well, we just wanted to know, would you like to do our show with us?
And I was like,
and
yes!
His face just changed, and he was like, yes!
Fantastic.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Next to Normal, coming up soon at the Pico Playhouse. We're talking to two of the amazing stars today. You guys obviously, you seem like you have other projects, I'm sure, that are going on right now. Has it been hard to devote as much time as you have to devote to something like this, Harrison, that you have to kind of dive into with everything and then keep life outside going as well? Are there other projects that you're having to balance right now?
Up until like a week ago, I was doing another show at the same time. So It was a juggling act, definitely, and I had to force myself to get like 9 or 10 hours of sleep every night and to eat healthier and
right.
And it did take a toll on me actually. I began to have like stomach problems and I was in actually the ER one night.
Oh no!
I'm okay now, but we don't know what happened. I think I just kind of overdid it.
My goodness.
But I've been fine since. And
it's always fun to go to the ER.
I know.
Nice little trip.
I think I had our like whole cast panel. Yeah. Well, I actually had it was a Thursday night, and I had a performance of I Love You Because the next night.
Ugh.
So it was a little messy for like a 2-day period, but I took all the precautions I needed to, and I got a lot of rest, and I feel 100% right now. So we're all good.
Well,
yeah.
You look great.
How much singing do you do in the show versus acting in the show?
I would say it's like 80% singing for my part, exactly. At least. But I
and Michelle, the same for you?
Well, I don't leave the stage for more than maybe 30 seconds at a time.
No.
So the show is probably about, I don't know, maybe 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
With the intermission or without?
I don't know. Yeah. But it's a lot. The show itself is a lot of singing.
Very dramatic.
It's like song, little interlude, medium-sized scene, song, little interlude. So there's a lot of singing. I would say all of us do 90% singing, 10%.
Yeah.
But in the singing, I mean, the the script is so rich, it really is like acting for 2 hours.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, obviously you should be certainly hydrating yourself during a performance like that, but are you hiding glasses or bottles of water?
There's no hiding. I have one little spot that nobody else goes in, that I have water bottles and this special spray that I make, which is unbelievably incredible that the entire cast has kind of jumped on the essential oil bandwagon with me. But yeah, that's pretty much like I just go off, I swig, I am changing while I'm swigging, and then I'm back on. So
wow,
it's pretty crazy.
Well, that's worth the price of it.
Yeah, right? Watch the show behind the show.
Come see the dance that is the backstage crazy of Next to Normal, the crazy musical.
39 songs in the show.
39?
39.
Yes. And every one of them is like a really meaningful song.
Oh, they're all so good.
The lyrics are amazing.
Oh, my God.
Right.
But that's like the best part about this show is that as an actor, we really didn't have to do that much because it's all there. Like, you know, you get some musical theater piece that you have to like do the song analysis and really dig and find something good in it to kind of connect the pieces. But really, like, the pieces are so beautifully connected in each of these songs that it's just, you just kind of, that's why I said before, you kind of jump on the roller coaster and you ride the ride.
Yeah.
Because it's all there.
If you haven't seen Next to Normal, it is a portrait of a family dealing with mental illness, but it's got so many deep and true characters that it really is a treat to watch. You sit there and you feel like you've seen something that really shows you how you can deal with things in your own life, which is what I love so much about it. But it really is just a lyrical tour de force. I mean, it is an epic story, both in song and in script. It's a really difficult piece to do and an absolute joy to watch. So I'm excited to see the show.
How many performances are you doing each week?
Just the one. They're just going to do one performance.
Just one.
All that work for one performance.
We perform Friday nights, two shows on Saturday, and a matinee on Sunday. Good. And we open on the 19th,
yes,
which is next Friday, my goodness. And then we close the 25th of September.
Yes.
But with a possible extension. So we might go two more weeks. So get your tickets so that we can keep going.
That's right. That's a beautiful house, the Pico Playhouse. So.
All right. So now it is time for the baptism of our guests.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. What is that about?
And now, embarrassing moments.
Their eyes just got so... I think we scared them, Michael. We got to learn to lock this studio door so our guests can't leave.
All right. Who wants to go first?
You go
first.
Mine actually happened 2 weeks ago on stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, breaking news here on State of the Arts.
Wow, what happened?
And it actually turned into a blessing, but I love you because I played five different characters, and one of them was this flamboyant Southern Chinese waiter.
Typecasting once again.
It was amazing. I saw it.
And it's just over the top, and the scene starts, and I'm at the table of the two ingenues, and I'm taking their orders, and as I'm walking away, the Hudson backstage has six poles that are just built into the structure, and I was turning away, like, totally in character, and I walked headfirst into the pole.
Oh, no.
And thankfully, I had such a quick reaction that I kind of played it off well. And actually, I just like used it in the character and just like made it look, I used my other actors as like, oh, that didn't happen to me kind of thing. And I actually had audience members asking if that was planned.
Oh my, thank God. Oh,
but
it did good.
It could have gone so much worse, but
wow.
it actually worked, and that was like the biggest laugh I got throughout the whole run.
Well,
so
I can say this now. I've always had the fear of turning around and knocking myself out cold on stage. I feel like as long as I'm conscious, I can play it off, but wouldn't that just be terrible to knock yourself out on something you bump into and just be down on stage and have everybody else have to cover for you?
Yes.
You're lucky it went as well as it did.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You have anything for us?
The one that comes to mind every time someone asks me the most embarrassing story is literally when I was 12 years old. Totally not performance related, but I was at a summer camp, and being a 12-year-old going through puberty and everything else, you know, boys are very important at that stage in my life. So, you know, the bell rings. I was at the pool and went to my cabin. This was sleepaway summer camp.
Oh, my.
It was great. I went every year as a kid. I loved camp. And changed into kind of, you know, your clothes for the day for snack. So I'm in a bathing suit, and I guess I had thought that I took my bikini top off and put I didn't remember that I didn't take it off. I thought that I kept my bikini top on. But really what I did was put my bra on. And then I put shorts on or something. So in my brain, I thought I was wearing shorts and a bikini top, which for a 12-year-old would be hot, right? So going down for a snack in my bikini, right? So I go down and I have my little, teen beat magazine in tow. And I go to sit down and I'm reading my magazine. And we're in lines, you know, when you kind of line up as a kid. And so we're in, like, lines. And then people start to stare at me.
Oh, no.
And I'm looking around side to side, and I'm like, what's going on? And a counselor just gently and kindly comes up to me and whispers to me that I forgot to put my shirt on. And I looked down, and I took the Teen Beat magazine, and I literally opened it, like, across my chest, and I ran, like, beet red, almost crying, like, in front of the entire camp, just running back to the cabin. And I was just, like, mortified. Like, it just was the worst ever, but so hilarious as an adult to reflect on.
But just think about it. If it happened 10 years later, you'd have been setting a fashion trend.
I know. So. I'd have been like, hey, guys, let's go. Exactly. Let's have snack in our bras today.
Oh, my goodness.
You too. Thank you so much for being with us today. We are at the end of the program, but that's a keeper story right?
I'm so excited to see the show, too.
Yeah.
What an amazing show.
Harrison, thank you so much.
Of course.
Michelle, thank you. And Thomas, thank you, sir. And always a pleasure to be sitting across the table from you, Mr. James.
Michael, you as well. So people, please get out and go to Pico Playhouse's website and check this out. And Michelle, would you give that that website one more time?
Yes, it's www.n2musicalla.com.
Thank you so much. And guys, thank you for joining us.
All right.
Michael, where will I see you next week?
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.